Hey guys, welcome to the Bill Barnwell Show. I am Bill Barnwell. Today, so excited to have a first-time guest, a long overdue first-time guest here on the Bill Barnwell Show to talk about one of my favorite topics when it comes to the NFL. I always love the opportunity to nerd out about something that everybody complains about, everybody talks about, but we don't actually know a lot about. We don't really understand. We don't really know how to solve or improve. And so joining me today to talk about her article on the NFL's turf and what the NFL is doing to try and resolve or improve some of the issues, the positives, the negatives, joining me to talk about all that, someone whose resume far exceeds my own, not just a longtime licensed physical therapist, not just an injury analyst for ESPN, but also a fellow senior writer who is joining us today to talk about one of the articles she wrote for ESPN. It is the wonderful Stefania Bell. Stefania, finally, we get together on the show. How are you, my friend?
Bill, I'm giddy because I am so excited to be joining your podcast. I listen faithfully. I've been a longtime listener. Long time, first time.
yes.
And I, you are the benchmark, I think, in the NFL podcast world. And I am so honored that you have invited me to join you. And now I can add this to my bio that I have guest on the Bill Barnwell Show. And hopefully it goes well enough that I'll somehow keep my name on the rotation. But you and I talk about a lot of these things offline because we get excited to nerd about them. And I'm just so excited to be able to do it on your podcast.
Yes. And long overdue. And this is a perfect time to have you on because this is a really fascinating topic. And I think sometimes with sort of abstract things related to the NFL, where everyone knows it's kind of, it matters, but it doesn't matter. You sort of need that, dramatic event to really spur change, or maybe to really dramatically sort of get people's attention on an issue. I think about and it ended up not working out in the long run, but the Saints-Rams conference championship a few years ago, where there was that terrible pass interference call. And after years of the NFL saying, we don't want to change, we don't want to review pass interference, at least for a year, sort of, they reviewed pass interference. That moment, big game, terrible call, spurred the NFL to do something they hadn't done before. The NFL's been working on this turf issue for a while. We're going to get into that. But there is an event you bring up in your column on this today at ESPN that obviously, creates the need for, and certainly confirms the need, I should say, for a better playing surface around the NFL, and it's the Aaron Rodgers injury. And I mean, I spent my entire summer talking about Aaron Rodgers and the possibility of what he would do with the Jets. I know the Jets spent millions of dollars building not only acquiring Aaron Rodgers, but also building the Aaron Rodgers All-Stars around him. Jets fans invested tons of money in jerseys. They invested tons of money in terms of tickets, their time. I mean, everybody was looking forward to Aaron Rodgers and seeing what he could do with the New York Jets. And then 4 plays in, his season is over because of a torn Achilles. And I want to start there in terms of field surfaces and the problems maybe with field surfaces around the NFL. And you bring up Aaron Rodgers' injury, and certainly it seemed like afterwards there were complaints that it may have been related to the turf at the Jets stadium. And we hear this a lot with certain stadiums. I remember Washington's surface came up a lot as one players were not thrilled to play on. I remember several players suffering injuries. That Washington-Seattle playoff game a decade ago now where Robert Griffin got hurt, Chris Clemens got hurt, a lot of players suffered serious injuries. But I want to start with this. Maybe this can kind of lead our discussion. From your perspective, whether it's talking to players, whether it's talking to people who work on this stuff, people who are trying to improve it, what makes for a good field surface? What sort of qualities, what sort of balance do the people putting these fields together have to strike where we can say, okay, they have a good field surface relative to some of the other fields around the NFL?
I'm going to answer your question, Bill, but I first want to go back to the Aaron Rodgers
yes. topic,
because you're right that it was just on such a huge stage, and with all the buildup with him mm-hmm. joining the Jets and all the excitement around it, that his injury was made that much more dramatic, right? Because it's so early, you know, there goes the season, like vanishing in front of everyone's eyes collectively. And as you mentioned, they had installed a new surface prior to him coming. It's actually a great article by our colleagues, Jordan Ronan and Rich Cimini, from late August, about how the players were raving about the new surface after the preseason home opener. And I have to say that as a physical therapist, if I put that hat on, the mechanism by which Aaron Rodgers' injury happened probably had little or nothing to do with the surface. And yet the visibility of it provided that springboard for the conversation, which is why we led the article with that, because it really did stir the pot and I kind of amp up the conversation, which has been happening sometimes louder than others. But I just find some irony in that this one was probably explainable with a 40-year-old quarterback going into a position where you're preloading the Achilles with another player falling on top of him. Could have probably happened anywhere. But the fact that it created the spark, in the end, maybe that's a good thing because it got people talking. So that's my bit on that. And to go with what makes a good surface, this is really a hard question to answer, because you have to define what are you calling a good surface? Is it something that the players feel good about when they play on it? That their body doesn't feel like it's aching, that it's more sore after playing on it than when they compare it to the natural grass, for example, if you're talking about an artificial surface. And I might add, not all grass surfaces play the same. We can get into that.
Of course.
But so there's that. There's the player performance side of it and the player comfort side of it. And that's very subjective to the players, but they know what they're used to. They know what they like. They know where they feel like they perform better. But then there's the safety side of it. You know, what surface is going to be the safest? And that is, you know, where a lot of the crux of the study is going, is trying to figure out what constitutes safe. And that has to do with when the lower extremity hits the ground and engages with the surface. A lot of the non-contact injuries we see, we believe, are associated with cleat release from the surface. So if the surface is too grippy and the cleat doesn't release well and the player is trying to move, pivot, cut, what have you, and the cleat sticks, is that a recipe for injury? And by the same token, you can't have a surface that's too slippery. Or then you not only have potential for injury, but you also go back to player performance issues. And then there's, you know, when you talk about a good surface, there's the durability of it, you know, just the nuts and bolts of how does it hold up? What is the cost of maintaining it, and how easy is it, and how reasonable is it to maintain? Does it make sense for a stadium to have a particular type of surface based on whether it's indoors or outdoors, weather elements, the multiple uses of said stadium? So there are all these factors that go into defining what a good surface is. And you can imagine that creates for a challenge when you're trying to find something that's universally appealing.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jets Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jets is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there is no competition. And right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, SAVE. Go to JetsPizza.com to learn more and find a Jets Pizza location near you. Again, try Jets Signature 8-Corner Pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's number 8, SAVE. Jets Pizza, better because it has to be.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Absolutely. So now with the idea of finding a good surface, you're writing about something today that is being built to test whether something is a good surface or test the sustainability, the ability of a surface to offer that sort of ideal support and that balance of stickiness and slipperiness, perhaps, when it comes to avoiding player injury while still retaining player traction. And on top of that, like you said, the ability to sustain across multiple events, across different kinds of events, because now, of course, I felt like this year, the NFL was mostly a backdrop in stadiums to Taylor Swift concerts. Like it was sort of the second most important thing, understandably. So what's being built to test these surfaces? What did you discover when you looked into this?
Well, there is this machine called the Beast. And in fact, I mean, it really is not just a clever name. It's an acronym. Come on, Bill. In anything medical or sports, we have
yes.
acronyms for things. And
that,
you know, we have to be clever in them. But B stands for Biomechanical Elite Athlete Shoe Turf Tester. And it really is exactly that. So this original concept of the Beast was developed back in, I think, 2008. And the idea was the engineering consultants at BioCore, that is a lab in Charlottesville, Virginia, where engineers, many of them originally who founded it with a background in the auto safety industry. So they understand labs and testing impacts. And they actually are responsible for a lot of the early concussion work that's been studied and the evolution of that data with the NFL. They built a machine that could look at loads based on, you know, the averages of an NFL athlete load when it impacted the ground. So creating this cleat, metal cleat that would stomp into a surface and then apply a rotational force or a tractional force and collect data from that and, you know, see, kind of test all these different angles of the cleat and how it hit and what the forces were, not only on impact, but the ability for the cleat to dissociate or disengage from the surface. So they would get samples of surfaces from stadiums around the league, bring them into the lab, do these tests. And they were looking at a couple of things. One was the surface itself. And when they look at that friction of coefficient with the surface or, you know, how easily it disengages, they were looking at the surface, but they're also looking at cleat wear, you know, and that's a different conversation, but the shoe is a part of this too. As you know, there are many different types of cleats. And so matching a cleat to a surface is part of the equation. But for our purposes, we're focusing on the testing of the surface. They got some insights from this that were really interesting and quite a bit related to cleat performance on different types of surfaces. But the problem was this unit is cumbersome. It's big. It has weight stacks with it.
It's called the Beast. Operating.
It's called the Beast, and it's impressive in what it does, but it wasn't something you could take out of the lab. So the next generation of the Beast comes along, and Dr. Felipe Aldair, who is featured in this article somewhat, is he was basically tasked with re-engineering the Beast to bring it out to the stadiums. Because as you can imagine, when you bring in a portion of a surface, you're just capturing it's like a still frame shot within a movie, right? Because the field surface is large, as you know, and you have probably heard players complain about the difference in how a surface feels when you're mm-hmm. near the end zone, for example, or near the sidelines. And that might be different from another area of the field that hardly ever gets touched. So the idea of bringing out a mobile unit was to be able to test various portions of the field by carving it up into grids, if you will, so that the beast could measure one grid at a time and compare the same measurements that it was doing in the lab, but compare them on a real surface in real time mm-hmm. out in the universe. And this was the first year that they started capturing data out in the stadiums.
Yeah, it's such a fascinating looking thing. When you, because in your head you picture, okay, if I'm describing to you the beast, and in Stefania you described the impact it makes, it looks exactly sort of like what you would, it's like a little smaller than a Zamboni, maybe. Is that yeah, fair to Zamboni. Say
it really does. It looked, that's a great, we were calling it that when we went down to Atlanta to film it in action. It was like, this is a field Zamboni, because it gets carted around, basically hitches up to a tractor or some driving unit that mm-hmm. will take it around, and then it parks in the grid, it lowers down to the surface, and then you can manipulate the computer, the operator can, and mm-hmm. it runs its test for that grid, and then they drive it to the next spot. And you're exactly right, that's what it looks like.
Yeah, it's like a Zamboni with little pounding feet, or NFL size pounding feet. But it's really cool looking. And I, you know, obviously it, I'm sure it measures a lot of things, but just when it, you know, in terms of what it's gathering, like, you know, we don't have to get into the sort of like the broader algorithms, but just like what sort of things are being measured, you know, in terms of the sort of data that's being gathered here?
Well, they can look at impact. So basically mm-hmm. how hard is the surface is the simplest way to describe that. You know, when the mm-hmm. cleat hits the ground, what is the, you know, what are the forces at impact for that leg that is meeting the ground? Mm-hmm. Then they can do a rotational test. They can do a translational test. If you picture, like, once the cleat hits the ground, as you're a player moving, you're doing one of a couple of things. As you move, you are pivoting or rotating, and you are sliding across the surface. Or that's the shear force, the translation across the surface. So they look at all of those things, and thank goodness you're not asking me to explain the algorithms, because I certainly can't. That's beyond my skill level. They have the engineers for that. But what's cool with this mobile unit is that as the data is collected, because it's all mm-hmm. computerized in the engineering of it, it's gathered and sent up to the cloud, and then they mm-hmm. can run whatever tests and algorithms they use or need, and they can get that data displayed on a visual screen on their laptop. So I was able mm-hmm. to look at some of this, and you see it briefly in the video at the header of the article. There's a quick moment where you see a laptop with like it's like a three-dimensional level to a field surface that can be mm-hmm. manipulated around, and they can carve it up into those little grids. So mm-hmm. they can see how one square, if you will, of the grid is performing relative to another square. And that gives them information about what, you know, how the field is and the surface is holding up.
So how often is this being tested, or how often is it expected to be tested, perhaps?
Well, they're in the early stages of this, because the pilot study with the beast just began this year. And as you can imagine, mm-hmm. because it looks like a mini Zamboni, it's, you know, it takes a bit to build one.
Yes.
It is not the easiest thing to move around. So the pilot study began this year with the goal of testing all synthetic surfaces around the league. So mm-hmm. each synthetic surface was tested at least once. Okay. Four locations had a beast unit that stayed with them year round.
So last year, four stadiums, I should say, because one of the stadiums has two teams, had a Beast unit on site all year. MetLife Stadium in New Jersey, Ford Field in Detroit, Mercedes-Benz Stadium in Atlanta, and AT&T Stadium in Dallas. But with that data, how often do you believe this data is being tracked? Or are they looking at things like, you know, how the turf or how those fields, you know, sort of degrade as the year goes along? And actually, why were those four stadiums chosen? Do you know?
I'm not sure why those four were chosen. I think there was a combination of factors. You know, they had the right surface because they were looking for synthetic surfaces and the ability to house them. And I think there was some volunteerism there from people who were willing to do it because it is a learning opportunity, but also there's time whenever you're learning something. So the grounds crews are the operators of the Beast, and there's training that goes along with that. And they then would participate in collecting data monthly, I believe, across the season. And to your point, yes, the idea is to see how does it play as the year goes along. You know, it's one thing to test it at one moment in time, but as we've talked about, there are so many conditions that can impact the surface. You want to see what happens as the year is moving along, especially given not only the games that are played, but the multiple uses of that particular stadium. You know, it could be weather situations if you have an external stadium, what have you. But this year, that was the launching point for the study. And they hope to next year incorporate testing of natural grass surfaces, because as we mentioned at the top, the natural grass surfaces have so many different variables that can make one grass surface different from another. And, you know, it's never been looked at, Bill. This is why I find the people who think that there's no question about what's the best surface, I would really encourage them to take a deeper dive into this to understand why this is a complex topic. Do you know that grass has really never been studied?
Really?
No, not in isolation. And many of these, the things that were developed were to look at synthetic surfaces and compare them. But no one's really ever done these same studies on grass surfaces. Now, they're doing some of that in the lab at BioCore, and also engineers at the UVA Biomechanics and Engineering Lab are doing some really interesting and creative work with similar thing, comparing different types of surfaces, and they house different samples from different fields, and they're studying that as well. But there isn't data to tell us which grass surface is performing well. And if you think back to, you know, just a couple of years ago, but the Titans replaced their surface, and they had difficulty maintaining their grass field. It became problematic. So that was not a desirable surface for the players either. And so the thing that I would say I've heard most often, players like the way grass feels. It feels better to them. It feels better on their body. And a well-maintained grass field provides them with the performance that they like, and the way they feel after the game is better. So the question becomes, is there a synthetic surface that can be more durable and maintain well that compares to natural grass? And there's never been an answer to that. I don't know the answer to that question. And the hope is that's what this data will start to show. Like, what really is an ideal surface when you take all those factors into consideration?
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
this comes up a lot in the NFL. I think there are things that make sense. And when you talk to players, you talk to fans, it adds up. And there's nothing wrong with stuff adding up. Usually that means that it's, you know, turns out to be accurate. But then when you actually look at the data or you test it, you find something totally different. I remember a good example of this, and it's a very different kind of concept, is the Thursday night games, where, of course, they famously have the rep, they're terrible, they're sloppy, everyone makes mistakes. It's somehow it's always like a four-win Jaguars team playing every Thursday somehow. There's never a good Thursday game. And of course, there are Thursday games that are bad. God knows right now I could use a good Thursday game. I do miss football.
I'm on that already.
For the season's over. You know, but when you actually look at the data, like, players don't drop passes at any higher of a rate on Thursdays than they do on Sundays or Mondays. I think it's even lower, actually. You know, players don't turn the ball over. Teams don't play their backup quarterbacks any more often on Thursday. And obviously there are things about Thursday games that are bad. Of course, the reduced time to heal after a Sunday or Monday game on a short week. The prep is different. And I do think there's something to it, but we start with the solution, or we start with the answer, and then we work our way back to figuring out what the issues are. We start with the idea that the Thursday games are bad, and then work our way back to trying to find explanations or justifications for that. And with grass and turf, I have no doubt that players are telling the truth here. That's that they're smart when it comes to saying, you know, we feel better after the games. We think we have a less chance. We have our chances of getting injured are reduced by playing on grass. But from what I remember, the NFL came out with data, and or at least from their perspective, they're saying that that's not the case. No.
Well, so a couple points I want to make here. Just, I get so excited. I'm a nerd like you. So there's all these things that I want to address in what you just
said.
And the first thing is, we reference the NFL all the time, but I really want to emphasize everything here is a joint project between the NFL and the NFLPA.
Yep.
So, and I think that's important because on the public face of it, I think you feel like they are butting heads completely, yes. Like diametrically opposed in their stances. That could not be further from the truth. And it's frustrating for me because I feel like I want to scream this to the world. When I was in Atlanta and meeting with engineers, when I went to Charlottesville, Virginia, was meeting with engineers, there's an NFLPA in engineering committee where there are appointees that are very smart people with doctorates and all kinds of research experience that, you know, way smarter than me, that are appointed by the NFLPA, and there are experts that are appointed by the NFL. And they, guess what, collaborate. It doesn't mean they all agree. You put a bunch of scientists together, they're never going to always agree. But they work together to come up with ways to scientifically test things, to look at data. And scientists are all about data and lack of emotion. So who better to test things like this than a group of scientists? Because they will challenge each other. And they're going to end up coming to a place that is far more objective than what we as fans, than what players who play on it will be able to do. Now, I also want to point out that that does not mean in any way, shape, or form that the player's input is being discounted. In fact, it's quite the opposite, because they've been doing player surveys. We mentioned that player surveys taken after every game, and this was a recommendation by the NFLPA, and it was encouraged and supported by the NFL. Again, working together. And so that player survey data actually started in 2022, but as part of this, the pilot, you know, formally for this testing began in 2023. So that input is being collated at the same time they are aggregating this objective testing from the field surfaces, because they want to see how it matches up. Players have a perception based on what they feel. But as of yet, there's no data to correlate player feel with rate of injury. Okay. So that doesn't mean that that doesn't exist. It just means it has yet to be studied and determined. So player input's important. The NFL and the NFLPA are collaborating. And those two things are really critical when we start talking about what this data means and how we go forward. And I'm sure I didn't answer your question in there, but it was really important for me to get that out.
No, that was very helpful and very insightful. You answered a better question than the question I had. So that was helpful.
I'm going to just say that I'm so passionate about this because I really love the idea that they're working together on this. And yes. I think they're kind of come to some solutions. Everybody wants an answer now. And anybody who knows science, it's painful. Things don't come quickly necessarily, but that doesn't mean that they're going to wait. Like if they learn things along the way and something really stands out, they're going to address it.
Yes. I mean, this is a place where both sides' incentives should be the same. NFL owners do not benefit from players getting injured or having players slip all over the field. I mean, I'm sure Jets ownership was not like, oh, Aaron Rodgers got hurt. Oh, well, like, you know, that was a huge season altering injury. And again, not saying it was because of the field. You pointed out that many reasons to think that was not the case, but no one benefits from seeing players get hurt. No one benefits from seeing players furious about the field. No one benefits from players slipping all over the place. So I guess what I find interesting is, at least from what I've read, and please correct me if I'm wrong, it seems like when the NFL has studied the injury data on turf fields versus grass fields, and obviously we can get into the synthetic field element of it, it seems like there has been no significant gap in terms of the difference in injuries. And that's sort of what I'm fascinated to see come out here is this idea of, you know, players certainly feel like their bodies are telling them grass fields are better, and grass fields can be better without injuries being the case here. But it seems that the NFL, from their perspective, has said, based on the data we've seen so far, it seems like there's not a big injury difference between turf fields and grass fields.
So this is where headlines are problematic.
Yes.
Because there's a few things at issue here. Number one is, earlier studies did show some differences in how synthetic surfaces played versus natural surfaces when it came to injury rates. It was a calculus of injury rate. So you take the type of injury that we're talking about, which is non-contact lower extremity injury, because if you take a helmet to your knee, a la Nick Chubb, it doesn't matter which surface is, right? Like that's a bad day and that injury is going to happen. We're talking about non-contact where it appears that something happened with the interface of that athlete's leg and the surface, okay? And so you can see, you can easily go back through the games and say, okay, this injury was non-contact, lower extremity injury happened on this day on this field. What's the field type? Okay, that's a natural grass field. This one happened over here. That's a synthetic surface. And that's how you get that data. But it only gives you part of the information. You know, what were the weather conditions that day? How well had the field been maintained? Was that field in crappy shape because the night before something else had played on it? You know, there's all these variables. And it also lumps together grass, which again, we have many different types of grass and issues that go with the different types and the conditions. And then synthetic, where you have all these different variables and different types of synthetic surfaces more and more in recent years. So, you know, originally back in the old days, you remember AstroTurf, which was like cement with little grass over it. And now the evolution of the synthetic surfaces is so different and there's so many more. So the problem is you have a correlation, but we didn't have causation. And that's a big, you know, when you look at these studies, that's what you have to be careful about leaping to conclusions for it. You know, you don't generate any fans amongst the players. Someone like me comes out and says something like that correlation doesn't equal causation. But when you start to look at all the different variables that are involved, and that includes player footwear, and also players' medical history and all these things. It's hard to know. Now, sometimes there can be something that stands out that is very glaring. And there was a study comparing some synthetic surfaces where the the slit film surfaces had a much higher injury rate than other synthetic surfaces. So when you see an outlier, then you start to think, well, maybe there's something here. And what I will say is when the league shared that data with the ownership, they can't mandate a new surface, but it was encouraged. And guess who were the last two slip film surfaces left that just went away? The one at U.S. Bank Stadium and the one at Paycor Stadium where the Bengals play. And they're being replaced this year. So there was something there in that science about that surface that made people go a different direction. So I think people should take note of that, that those things can happen. But the idea that we have the answer, I think, is misleading. And what happens when you get these headlines about injury rate is it doesn't still answer all the questions, but where we started, what makes the ideal playing surface. I will say to your point that this year, the most recent comparison of injury data, again, synthetic versus natural grass, which I think is too broad based on everything I've said already, but it was negligible. It's like 0.0001. And so that starts to get interesting, right? And it doesn't mean that those surfaces are equal. It means that we have to figure out what are the metrics that we're going to discover. I say we, like the collective we, the universe. I'm not talking these studies. But what's going to be learned that's going to teach us what constitutes an ideal surface? And that may not be the same for every stadium, because every stadium is always going to, it got different conditions all around. And maybe in one location, a particular combination of features will work really well. And in another location, a particular combination of features will work in that location. But the idea is to reduce the variation, because right now, and Jeff Miller, who is the NFL's EVP of health and safety, will say it's the equivalent of playing on 30 different surfaces, because, you know, we have 30 different stadiums. And that means that that's part of the problem for the players. And it's my experience talking with players that that's the case as well. They feel like, I just want to know what I'm going to feel like when I go to a stadium. And they don't know, you know, one time they go one place, it feels terrible. Another place feels really good. So you can imagine their frustration. So when are we going to get to the point where the metrics will guide us in how to construct a surface where the players feel like, yep, week in and week out, I pretty much know what to expect.
Yeah, that was what I was going to ask you as we finish up here, was sort of this question I hear a lot from fans. And I see a lot in the comments when players get hurt or players are complaining about, you know, the quality of the field, which, again, there's definitely times where fields are terrible and players should be complaining. You hear sort of one of two conversations. You hear either one, why doesn't every stadium just have the same turf or grass, which I think you laid out exactly why that's the case. But also there's the FIFA question, which is the FIFA World Cup has come in and they're going to be playing in a ton of NFL stadiums and they're demanding natural grass. And so there's been this question of why don't NFL teams have natural grass in their stadiums for the NFL season if they can put in natural grass for the FIFA World Cup? So from your perspective, why do you think there is not more of a push for those teams to play with natural grass all year round?
So what's interesting is that the NFL is in conversation with FIFA about this. And I can't tell you where FIFA rests in their decision-making. We just know that there's certain expectations that they have. But when I was talking with Jeff Miller, he said, you know, FIFA is going to be playing in the World Cup and they're going to use some of the same stadiums, some of the NFL stadiums, and that's going to be 2026. So he said they've been speaking to them about some of the surfaces that they're going to use, which will be hybrid surfaces. So primarily grass, a hybrid surface is primarily grass, but it has some synthetic fibers woven in. And my understanding on a very basic level is that helps the durability of the grass, but so it's a hybrid surface. And he was saying that as FIFA chooses surfaces, they want to hear from them what choices they're making, you know, why are they doing it, and then use some of their tools to potentially test. So I think, you know, whether that's the beast or not, I think it sounds like they may actually incorporate some testing specifically around what happens with the World Cup. And he went on to say that, you know, they can learn from each other's research and kind of see how these different surfaces have played for NFL players and how they're playing for players, you know, soccer players in the World Cup. You know, one of the things is there are challenges with growing grass indoors over an extended period of time. But if you have indoor grass, how well can you maintain it? You know, can you uphold it for an entire NFL season, which is shorter than the lifetime of longer than the lifetime of a World Cup, right? So if there are some benefits that they see to how some of these hybrid surfaces perform, for example, maybe they will take a chapter out of that. Maybe they will adopt some of those surfaces. So I don't think that's a closed question. I just think that there's a data collection that's going to happen as a result. Maybe, and I can't speak to this, you know, maybe there are some stadiums that are like, okay, we want the World Cup because we've decided it's worth the installation of a different surface to get that experience here, even if we then have to change it back. I don't know. That's a question for the individual stadiums. But I do know that the league is in conversation with FIFA so that they can kind of grow together and learn from this. I don't know that those surfaces are the end-all be-all, but that is currently what soccer has decided they want to use. And I will tell you that FIFA doesn't have this device, you know, so that maybe that just comes from it's what they've always done and it's what their players like. But that doesn't necessarily answer the scientific question.
Right. And it's a totally different sport, obviously, with different demands of their players and different forces. I mean, it's there's similarities, of course, it's still an athletic endeavor, but just a really interesting sort of comparison there. Here's what I want to finish up with. And this is if you thought the questions have been tough before this question is impossible. That's why I'm asking you this question. And obviously there's still so much research to be done, but from your perspective, whether it's 5 years, 10 years, 15 years down the line, if this sort of research continues to be done, if we continue to gather more data, what do you think the future looks like for NFL surfaces? What do you think the future looks like in terms of player injuries? Do you think we'll have fewer varieties of surface? Do you think we'll have like a best practice for some kind of synthetic field or different kinds of synthetic fields? Like, you know, right now you mentioned the quote about there being 30 surfaces. Do you think we'll have that down to a smaller number? Do you think player injury rates will be improved by this research? I mean, where do you think this is all heading?
I do think yes to all of those things. And at least that's the goal. The goal is to reduce the number of surfaces. And by the way, when I said 30 surfaces, I don't mean there are literally 30 different types. But I mean that given all the conditions and variables that can impact how a surface, quote unquote, plays, it is as if there are 30 different types because there's no measure of consistency from one to the next. And yes, we have those the tests that they do to make sure that fields are playable before each game, but it really is a measure of the hardness of the field. And it's limited. And by the way, the beast eventually could be incorporated into doing some of that pregame testing to make sure the fields are even better suited for a game event, if you will. But I do think that there will be a best practices adopted. I think the more they can target metrics, you know, what is the hardness of the field? What is, what's the ideal infill composition for a synthetic surface? Because again, it's not just the filaments, which are the blades of the grass that you see and how that's constructed and whether it's straight or twisted and multi-fiber or single filament. believe me, I've gotten an education in but infill, you know, we think about rubber and sand because that's been so common, but the Titans installed an organic infill that was cork and coconut, I believe. There are, there's another company that has an organic one with corn. So, you know, you start getting into the weeds with all the different variables. I think at some point it will be, what are the recipes? What is the concoction of the construction of a surface, whether it's synthetic with infill or a grass surface, the ideal kind of grass and the maintenance of said grass? What's, you know, if you're going to have natural grass, what are the lighting conditions that you're going to have in place for that to work? So a lot of different things, because they want people, stadium owners, to be able to decide what is the best fit for them, but knowing that they have to meet certain targets or thresholds would certainly help guide it better than what we're doing now. So I think that is the hope. And I do think that if they can get there, they will see a decline in injury rates. You're never going to wipe injuries out of football.
Right.
Never are. It's a collision sport with two large people, sometimes many more, moving fast and coming at each other hard and colliding, and things happen. But when you see a player go, you know the feeling. You see a player plant and cut and they go down in a heap. And you, your frustration, you feel for them. Like, why did that happen? There was nothing there. And I think that those kind of injuries are really the ones they want to try and target and eliminate as to the extent that it's possible to do so.
Yeah, that would be great. Stefania, we could talk about this a ton more, but a lot more stuff to come here on this topic, I am sure. Until we get the beast results, until there are 30 beasts in 30 stadiums and we get loads of data to work with, what are you working on? Tell people where they can find more Stefania Bell in their lives.
That's if that is so desired. It's interesting because I sometimes don't know everything I'm working on, but I will plug a couple things I've done recently, because it's just, I people sometimes think I only do football or I only do fantasy football. This is a reminder. I like to dive into the deeper topics that are related to health and safety and sports medicine. When those come out, I will certainly let people know. Follow me on Twitter or X at Stefania _ESPN, at Stefania Bell on Instagram. But I'm working on this. I'm looking at some other player safety issues, hopefully some stuff related to some of the upcoming quarterbacks in the NFL draft and a unique throwing coach that some of them are working with. So I'll just tease that right now. But I'm also doing the Fantasy Focus football podcast. In our off season, we're only once a week, so I do a couple shows a month. And, you know, and I have a feature, E60 documentary that premiered in December on a UFC fighter, Chris Weidman, who had an injury very similar to one Alex Smith suffered. But it was, you know, these stories are really about, I know you cringe because it's not fun to watch the injury, but people love the triumph of the human spirit. And that's what I love. You know, I as a PT, you get to watch people fight through things to come back. And so I love telling those stories. And Chris Weidman is an amazing guy who had a horrific injury and came back to fight in August and has a fight upcoming again in March. So when you see what he came back from and you see him and his family, he was just inducted into the Hofstra Hall of Fame because of his legendary college wrestling career. But you can find that on E Plus under original films, Spotlight, Chris Weidman, The Return. And it's going to air on ESPN2 a couple times in March. So stay tuned for
that. Awesome. Stefania, if you were strictly just a great fantasy football podcaster, that would be one thing. You contain multitudes, do so much for us at ESPN. Thank you so much for finally appearing. And yes, we will have you back on soon.
Thank you so much for having me. This is the highlight of my month.
All right. Thanks so much to Stefania Bell, finally making her debut. I've been meaning to have her on for a while now. Stefania is great. Obviously, her work at ESPN, written wonderful. video wonderful, podcast wonderful with the folks over at Fantasy Focus. I think I've completed the entire set now. I think everyone from Fantasy Focus has appeared on the Bill Barnwell Show. Very exciting. I'll have to get the checklist. I'll have to have them all four at the same time, or everyone on at the same time, with Mike included as well, of course, to have a huge Fantasy Focus special podcast here on the Bill Barnwell Show. But hope you guys enjoyed that deep dive into something we don't normally talk about, but comes up when injuries pop up. We have more audio coming this week. Didn't have a show last week because I was at the Combine, but going to have some post-Combine draft discussion later on this week. So look forward to that and more audio on the way here on the Bill Barnwell Show.